Heretic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back into the Early Line. Kevin Walsh, Donnie Wrightside here on this Friday morning on Sports Grid. And it is time to take a look at the AL MVP race. Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge. Let's start with Judge, your minus 140 favorite, a walk-off home run in a 1-0 victory against the Kansas City Royals. Judge's third walk-off homer of the season, 39th on the year. He is a minus 600 favorite to hit the most home runs in baseball this season, the potential to possibly not just get 50, but get 60, maybe even pass Roger Maris's 61, all feels in play as Aaron Judge has maybe been baseball's hottest hitter post-All-Star break DRS, and now we're seeing the odds continue to shift in his favor, a minus 140 number.
Yeah, it's fun to watch the day-to-day movement here because as you get less and less games to play as we head into August and September, him versus Ohtani is something that we're going to be taking a look at. But let's look at where the odds possibly would have moved yesterday. And forget about Shohei Ohtani's start. Let's just focus on Aaron Judge coming off that performance against the Mets where they didn't look all that good. The offense wasn't very good. Neither was Aaron Judge in that 0-for-5 effort. Comes into this baseball game and before hitting that home run, doesn't have a base hit. Either the Yankees don't have a run. What happens if this game would have been a Kansas City 2-0 win where Aaron Judge doesn't get to walk anything off, get an RBI or a home run, how that might have shifted some of these odds because now he's the prohibitive favorite here at a minus 140. But having said that, he did hit the home run, Kevin. The Yankees did win the game. The Yankees didn't even have a run before Aaron Judge rescued them with that solo home run. These are the moments that we talk about in an MVP race where you say doing something big on a national stage, doing something historic, hitting his 39th home run. Also, the third time this year he's had a walk-off home run for the New York Yankees, which battles, I believe, Mickey Mantle. So one more of those in a walk-off home run setting, he's going to set that Yankees record. This is how you win the MVP. Your team wins games. Your team is the best team in baseball, and you're the best home run hitter in baseball. When all those things, Kevin, fall in the line on one night, the odds are going to move in your favor, as it did for Aaron Judge.
And the thing, again, is he is just red hot right now. Super, super dialed in. So we're one home run away from number 40, which feels like a big thing. And that's kind of the thing that we're looking for, right, is big moments. So a walk-off home run holds a lot of weight in the conversation. I think getting to the 40th will also kind of be a big moment, if you will, for Aaron Judge. Interestingly enough, for Judge, going out there and getting a walk-off home run in a 1-0 game is more impactful, it seems, than Ohtani going out there, 6 innings, 8 hits, which is a little more than you'd expect, 2 earned runs, no walks, 11 strikeouts of the Texas Rangers. And this is the first time now, because I've made this point to plenty of people. No one will seem to listen to me, I feel like. But I will ask you this, Donnie. Is this the perfect example of the first time where the he's a pitcher and a hitter aspect for Ohtani comes into play? Again, the MVP award of the National League is not rattled off with pitchers, nor in the American League. Ohtani went out there, and he was 0-for-4. Did that kind of ding up evaluating this Ohtani performance along with losing to the Rangers at home?
I don't think it does, because when you're trying to line these up, the advantage usually shifts towards Shohei Ohtani because he's a pitcher and a hitter. So unless Aaron Judge either A, hits a home run and the Yankees win, or if he doesn't, that seems like where the impact for the odds come from my vantage point. Because if we have a Shohei Ohtani start, let's just roll reverse. Yesterday, again, the Yankees lost 1-0. Judge didn't have a hit, no home runs. Shohei Ohtani goes 6 innings, 2 earned runs. They still lose the game, but he goes, let's just say, 1-for-3 at the plate as opposed to 0-for-4. I don't think those odds would have shifted nearly as much because Aaron Judge sort of doesn't get that extra credit, as I like to say. We expect Aaron Judge to hit home runs, and we expect the Yankees to win games. So when they do that, and they do that on the same night, home run and the Yankees win, that's where your boost comes from. But I don't think there's any boost here coming from just the Yankees win and Aaron Judge isn't a part of that win, whereas I think you get the boost on that same night is if Ohtani gets any base hits or pitches decently on the mound, that's his night to advance on the FanDuel Sportsbook and increase his odds. But yesterday was the perfect scenario. You look at the mound start here. Now, Ohtani was terrible in his last outing out. But if you say 6 innings, 2 earned runs, and 11 Ks, that seems like a great performance. And if Ohtani has 6 innings, 2 earned runs, and 11 Ks every start the way out, he's probably going to win the Cy Young at that point. But the fact that he lost so much ground last night was a direct fact because Ohtani, again, didn't get the base hit that he needed, wasn't unreal as 7 innings, no earned runs, 12 Ks, and they won. And Aaron Judge hit a walk-off home run. That's what we remember. That's what we think of an MVP as.
But this, and that's kind of the thing for me of MVP, primarily a hitter's award, right? 6 innings, 8 hits, 2 earned, 11 strikeouts, right? Is not doing anything for a National League pitcher. It's not. Again, Sandy Alcantara's not in the race. 101. Nobody's talking about Sandy in the National League. And you might say, oh, but that's an unfair bar for Ohtani. It's what it is. It's what it is. Ohtani is Ohtani because he does both. But he has largely gotten a pass from a lot of people because the other side of it, the hitting side, usually more important to the MVP race, he has not been overwhelming in. Again, also, they lose to the Texas Rangers. Now, that's not his fault that they were, you know, embarrassingly horrendous against Howard. He's a part of that there. But that also does not help. Jumping up into losing effort as a pitcher. People are going to still not care about that. All right, we'll be right back here on the early one.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Right back at it here. This is the early line. Donnie Wright side along with Kevin Walsh on a Friday morning as we set the table. And guess what? And we talk some NFL. We talk mandates. We talked why is this clause in a contract? Kevin, it's time to talk a little NBA action because apparently this is starting to go around here. Extra added clauses for superstar athletes getting big money. Talk to me about what's going on with Zion Williamson down in New Orleans.
Yeah, one of those things where I thought it was super appropriate on the heels of everything that we're hearing about Kyler Murray, that the contract given to Zion Williamson includes some weight clauses there. Now, before I even get to the specifics of that, it does confirm that Zion's been out of shape and New Orleans clearly has not been happy about that. At least that would be my read on the situation. There's some body fat percentages in there, but the easy number for people to digest is that he has to be less than 295 pounds. Now, I know that you see that number, you hear that number, and it almost comes off comedic, right? That look, he's not 7 foot two, Zion, right? I mean, he's listed, at 6'6", 284 pounds. I mean, that is a huge dude, no matter how you put it. The thing, though, about Zion is when he has played, he has been largely unstoppable. If you look at that sophomore season, 27 points a game, 61% shooting, and he was doing that in just 33 minutes a night. It's about being out there. I guess the idea is they believe that a slimmer Zion is a more available Zion, which is super, again, reasonable to kind of project and assume towards him. It adds in, though, that if he does not meet weight thresholds, he can kind of have money taken from him. The idea that Zion steps on a scale at 300 pounds like an MMA fighter and has to try and go back and sit in a sauna to cut weight and get his pay is quite ridiculous, though.
But you know what's interesting about this whole thing, though, is like, say, like, this is what's wrong with pro sports. Like, if you're a professional athlete, your body is your temple. Like, you want to play long in this league, you got to take care of yourself. Like, look at LeBron James, one of the, I don't want to say the first athletes, but maybe to take it to the next level where even at a young age, Kevin, he's sitting in the ice tubs and doing everything he needs outside the game so he can be elite well into his 30s. It just feels like Zion, once he hits 29 years old, is probably going to hobble up and down the court. But the one caveat that they did put in the contract here with the weight stipulation, you'll love this one here, right? Because everybody's tried to lose weight. You step on the scale one day, let's just say it reads 200 pounds. The next day it reads 203. You know, you work it off, it goes back to 199. But it actually says the contract stipulates that Williamson must weigh in or at below 295 periodically through the deal. So you know what that means, right? Hey, I was good on my diet. I cheated a lot last week. I'm at 305 right now. All right. We got 2 weeks to work that back off. I can't even believe this comes into it. But quite frankly, when you look at such an explosive athlete, if we never heard of him, Kevin, getting hurt, he's like, let's just say Charles Barkley back in the day, the round mound of rebound. Yeah, he's a little bit chunky, but he's there every night and dominating. Mm-hmm. Zion misses games, weeks, months, and seasons because he's not in shape. And it's not the fact that he says, okay, he continually gets hurt. It looks like the derivative is he's too heavy to be that explosive in that body and getting him hurt. Where do you see this contract? Is this a good thing here for the New Orleans? Because actually, quite frankly, I love the fact that he signed back with them because we always thought it was Zion's going to wait his time in New Orleans, then he's going to be a Knick, then he's going to be a Laker and get out of there. Big contract, he stays there. But how do you see this playing out, honestly?
So if you look through the FanDuel Sportsbook right now, their win totals posted 43.5. That's an above 500 basketball team. They have the 9th best odds in the Western Conference. So just narrowly missing out on that top 8 group there. This is a team with expectations. Pushed the Suns last year, nearly eliminated them, and that was all without Zion Williamson. Full year of McCollum. Another year better for Brandon Ingram, and of course the anticipation is that full year for Zion Williamson. I love what you said, though, about kind of his explosiveness in that body. Like, is there a chance that if he trims down, can he be more explosive, more impactful on the basketball court? Really the last question that I have, and we might not get these specifics because, I mean, it is personal information, though, with athletes, it turns into public information. I'd like to know what Zion weighs right now. Like, is he 270? Is he 291? Like, how close are we to this threshold? That's what I'd like to know.
Yeah, you're right about that, because does he giving himself room, Kevin? Like, he's like, you know what? I'm going to get down to 255 before I hit camp, so that way I can just eat all season long and build up. And if I gain 30 pounds, I'll still be below that limit here. It'll be interesting to find out, but I think we can agree on one of the most explosive guys in basketball, that when he's on the court, he's a highlight every single night. And as long as you don't eat up his quote-unquote minutes restriction, you usually get a pretty good outcome. Let's keep it moving here in the NBA, because quite frankly, I'm disappointed right now, K-Dub, with the NBA. I need movement. Mm-hmm. I got superstar players waiting to change teams, and I'm not seeing it. But reports continue to come out. We can sort of piecemeal things together. Talk about why the Jazz actually don't want R.J. Barrett at this point.
Yeah, so the report right now, this is from Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report, is they're not really interested in paying RJ an impending max contract, which is what most people are anticipating he will command, at least Knicks fans who are completely enamored with him. And this is, to me, a very interesting kind of part of this puzzle. Now, we have kind of seen some trade details that would suggest the Knicks actually don't need to give up R.J. Barrett to bring in Donovan Mitchell because of how many draft picks they really have at their disposal to potentially send to Utah. But again, I've found that to be one of the fascinating things about this, you know, race for Donovan Mitchell. We the other day heard there are other teams in the mix that we didn't initially know about there. I think it's pretty interesting that it's one of those scenarios where Knicks fans are like, no way we give up R.J. Barrett. And it seems like in the Utah room, they're like, yeah, we're good.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. Where it doesn't always come down to, Kevin, how good you are on the court. It's almost like the future of the team you're going to and what they're willing to pay for that. Because if he comes to your team, what are we looking at? That's a cornerstone player with that big money. Maybe they don't rate him as high as some other teams in the NBA would do so. Now, here's an interesting story coming out for the Los Angeles Lakers. How many times have we heard in the offseason, if you want to get rid of Russell Westbrook, you're going to have to include a draft pick in order to entice another team to take him. Mm-hmm. If you're LeBron James and he's playing GM of the Lakers, he'd do it in a heartbeat. But is there news coming out that maybe around the NBA, like, hey, you know what? One is nice. I think we're going to need two draft picks to take Russell Westbrook off your hand. Talk about that.
Yeah, so Hoops Hype's Mike Scotto was saying, kind of the report is, the Lakers will need to include at least two first-round picks in any trade involving Russell Westbrook. I'm wondering kind of, you know, what is exactly he trying to get at? If the indication is, in order to shed the Westbrook contract, they need to send somebody two picks. Respectfully, no, they don't. Or at the minimum, they won't. They will just send him home John Wall style. There is no world. If the idea is Westbrook not being on your team is fantastic, you don't have to get rid of two picks for that. Now, if the indication is, for example, right, let's just take the Kyrie Irving deal. It takes one pick to get off Russ and then one pick to get, you know, Kyrie Irving to your basketball team, at least I can understand where you're coming from. But this is part of the reason I don't believe you have seen the Lakers panic and push all in yet, Donnie. Is a little difficult, I think, to justify that Kyrie Irving, viewed as a negative asset to every single team in the NBA other than the Lakers, is going to be involved in a trade where the Lakers give up two first-round selections. Kyrie has zero suitors but the Lakers, but the Lakers are going to have to give up multiple first-round picks. That's why you're not seeing the Lakers panic. They believe they have more leverage than a lot of others seemingly are reporting.
NBA talk on a Friday, always hot here with K-Dub, but also stay tuned. Major League Baseball is on deck right now. There will be hits.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on a Friday morning. That's a Friday. I think we're allowed to have a little more fun on a Friday. I got to be honest with you, Donnie. I think you let something slip last segment, I have to say. And it's not Dwight Howard's impending WWE move, right? How did you miss out on an opportunity to compare Zion's weight clause in his contract to me?
See?
How did you miss out on that?
Because I'm nice. I'm a nice guy. I'm not always playing like that. I don't always have to get down like that. Maybe I wasn't reading the room correctly where how that segment would have went over. It started, quite frankly, the segment almost started with a blank screen with me probably staring around like this, like, oh, it's my turn to host this segment here. That's how it would have started. See, maybe that threw me off where, hey, you know you're hosting this segment. Like, oh, you know what? I can't be witty now.
Yeah. You didn't have enough time to come up with jokes.
I didn't.
It seems like it is the one topic occasionally you're not sure how deep in the water you want to get there. But it was one of those things when I put that in the show yesterday, I went, I know what I'm walking into right now. I was almost let down that I wasn't, I didn't catch.
And, you know, it didn't even come to my mind. It wasn't even something where, you know how something, like, you know, maybe this isn't the best time to bring this up and have fun with this. It didn't even slip my mind because I think the fact that usually I'm staring off in the space as you like open up the segment, but the fact that I got snapped back to reality, like my sarcasm meter got shut down during that. I said, all right, be professional here, at least somewhat.
Yeah, there you go. All right, well, let's see if we can get some professional picks for these people because we got the Mets and the Marlins getting after it once again. I feel like Bassett only pitches against the Miami Marlins, and I know this for a fact. I have twice bet his over strikeout prop against the Marlins and lost both. For me, that's, you know, eliminated. Can't possibly even consider it no matter what the numbers say. But what do the numbers say to you? Contra's a home dog. That's, I don't know, that's a little surprising to me.
Yeah, big ballpark down there. Alcantara on the mound, and there's no surprise as you look right there at the FanDuel Sportsbook odds. A -124 for the Mets, which seems about right because the Mets are a better ball club than the Marlins. And I'm not so sure that you say it's more of a dominant pitching performance that you're going to expect out of Alcantara than you are Bassett. Look at the total, a 6.5. That is incredibly low here, but when you sort of break this game down, it makes sense. That Marlins lineup doesn't give me any pause for concern where Bassett can't hold them down, and then Alcantara here on his home diamond, he should be sensational as well. Even looking at just the past 30 days, Kevin, 3.30 xFIP for Alcantara, absolutely filthy splits between lefties and righties. He's a right-handed pitcher, Kevin, a 157 weighted on base average to lefties, a 266 to righties, equally low ISO power numbers. You flip it over to Bassett, 3.34 xFIP over the past 30 days, and couple that with a 231 weighted on base percentage to lefties and a 255 to righties. Where are the hits coming from? It just seems like this game screams 3-2, and even though you see a 6.5, which is a ridiculous number, it actually plays into it for me, Kevin. It really does.
The interesting thing is, you know, for Sandy, is he does have 3 starts so far against the Mets. He, though, has only been able to grab a win in one of them. Grabbed the loss and then a no decision, but it was a game that the Marlins were victorious in. But again, a plus price in his building there, it does jump off the page a little bit. If it was Scherzer on the other side, I don't bat an eye. Bassett, again, it feels like a number that you'll live with the results on. Orioles-Reds, I love this year. I really, really do. Now, sadly, we don't have early lines right now on this baseball game, so let me know what you're thinking. But I'm just saying that I love this because Orioles-Reds is usually a series, if I would have told you preseason, this deep in, no juice here, nobody's going to be excited. We're now going to look at this and, like, the anticipation is going to be road favorite Baltimore. What are you expecting, though, when we get kind of the pitchers and everything here between Cincinnati and Baltimore?
The lineups don't look sensational here, but if we're taking a snapshot, Kevin, of the last 30 days, and most of these pitchers, it looks like Kramer, over 100 batters that he's faced, and also right around 100 batters from Mike Minor. Now, if we take a look, one of these pitchers here is a righty, one's a lefty, but neither one of these, Kevin, can get right-handed batters out. So if we're anticipating, I'm more of a total guy in this game. But again, as I said, not great lineups, but if we just take a look at Kramer on the mound here, xFIP over 5 for the past 30 days, which isn't good. He's a right-handed pitcher. Get this. To left-handed batters, a 249 weighted on base percentage and an ISO power number of 019. Absolutely filthy he is versus lefties. But take a look against righties where he's faced about 50 batters here. A 417 weighted on base percentage and an ISO power number of 256. There's not a lot of lefties that are going to be in the lineup for the Cincinnati Reds that we anticipate. Let's flip it over now and see how the Baltimore lineup projects against Mike Minor. Bad pitcher, Kevin. How about this xFIP? A 6.70 over the past 30 days. Now, granted, again, he's a left-handed pitcher. He absolutely dominates left-handed batters. A 146 weighted on base percentage and 0 ISO power number through 25 batters. Not a lot, but a decent little sample size. Flip it over to the right side now. Minor versus 72 batters that he's faced from the right-hand side, a 460 weighted on base percentage and an ISO power number of 323. They're going to stack right-handed bats against Minor. So if we get a lot of right-handed bats in this game tonight, it's almost like even though the offenses aren't great, something's got to give, and it's probably going to be the pitcher giving up home runs.
I really cannot wait to see this number. Give me an idea, though, Donnie, from you. You look at the pitchers, you look at the lineups here. Like,
yeah,
it is. I don't know. It's still the Orioles. They're on the road. What do you think a Baltimore money line looks like in this game? Can they be -150?
No, they're not going to be. I don't think they're going to be that high. Now, granted, over the last 60 days, if we take a look at like xFIP minus numbers, Minor is terrible. He's got a 134. But then look, yeah, we look at Kramer. He's at a 116. They'll be a favorite. But this screams a -125 to me. It really does.
That might just scream value then. Not 9 starts for Minor this year. He's lost. Yeah. Wait, he's 1-7 as a team. They've lost 8 of those 9 starts. I think
he's bad.
Baltimore's gonna, yeah, they're gonna jump off the page today for a lot of people. Let's keep this thing moving here. The Battle of PA rolls on. Pirates and Phils, super high scoring game yesterday. 15 total runs put on the board. Quintana against Falter, slight road favorite status here for the Philadelphia Phillies. How does this one match up?
Yeah, Philly's bats woke up yesterday, which is great. Now, today, they might struggle a little bit against Jose Quintana. 3.52 xFIP number over the past 30 days. He's been great, Kevin, versus lefty and righties. But this isn't even the handicap for me. Should the Phillies win this game? Yes, they're supposed to win it. But I always get back to the point where I can knock the Phillies every fifth day because they bring up, again, like Bailey Falter. If you're a half game back of the wild card. You're supposed to be trying to pulverize these teams, which yesterday looked like you were going to do against the Pirates and almost slipped up because Jeurys Familia is a terrible pitcher, and I have no idea why he's still on the roster for the Phillies. Should be DFA'd after last night's dismal performance where the closer had to come in and actually shut the game down, which means you wasted a chance to rest, you know, Sir Anthony Dominguez, which certainly didn't happen. But let's take a look at Falter. He just doesn't get guys out. You just always have an option for the other team going, whew, thank goodness. It's not Nola. It's not Wheeler. It's not even a decent pitcher. It's a guy with close to 6 xFIP over the last 30 days and getting destroyed from both lefties and righties. Take a look at his splits here, Kevin. He's a left-handed pitcher. To lefties, only 9 batters. Man, I bet he wishes there was, you know, less than that. A 433 weighted on base percentage. And you know what the best part about this is, Kevin? To the right side, identical. 433 weighted on base percentage. He doesn't get anybody out. It's almost like a joke. Like, you have better prospects in your organization, but you keep running this guy out to say, maybe we can win 7-6 tonight. It's ridiculous.
And total is an 8. The interesting thing to me with a game like this, at this time of year, Quintana is a big-time trade candidate. The anticipation is he will be moved off of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Does that impact how far they let him go? I'm not sure, right? If you look at his last outing, he was excellent. 7 innings of work, only 81 pitches. Could they have kept him out there a little bit longer? They could have. They decided not to. But the outing before that, he did throw 103 pitches, but it was only over 5 innings. It's just one of those things you keep in mind when you're trying to figure out strikeout props and things of the nature here. Quintana's a guy that we are anticipating will be on a new baseball team sooner than later. Enough time for us to, at least here in this segment, get to Cardinals and Nationals, a.k.a. Juan Soto Bowl. You've got Michaelis on the road as a minus 180 favorite against Anibal Sanchez. Total here is a 9. I think this is also noteworthy that Goldschmidt and Arenado, anticipating, obviously, these guys being back at it. How are you matching it up here?
I mean, it's only going to be St. Louis or a bust for me at this point. Is it an expensive price to go on the road at a minus 180 price? Yes, but at any moment, like, you might even get a Soto gone or a Josh Bell gone at this point. But also, it's the fact that I've railed on this last time we had an Anibal Sanchez start. The guy's not a Major League Baseball pitcher at this point. The only reason why he's in baseball here is because he has an arm and he can throw, and you don't want to set the clock on any one of your good young prospects coming up. So anytime you see that, and you're going to see a lot more of this in Major League Baseball post-trade deadline where teams raise the white flag and go, you know what? I'm not bringing up my best prospect to get 2 or 3 starts and have to pay him a year or two earlier than I would have. So I'm going to run guys like Anibal Sanchez out here. 5.28 xFIP here. He's only faced about 40 batters. Absolutely getting lit up like a Christmas tree from the right-hand side. A weighted on base percentage of 594 and an ISO power number 462. He's not a major league player. So if we do get back in the lineup, Arenado and Goldschmidt, maybe a team total here for the St. Louis Cardinals makes some sense. They should light up Sanchez.
The Cardinals team total coming into this game is a 5 at minus 118. Yeah. So a big-time number in that respect. Here's the interesting thing, too, is, you know, I was wondering, do you go Goldschmidt, Arenado, kind of hit a prop parlay? Look at these numbers. These are some of the highest numbers you'll see when you talk about to record a hit. Minus 360 Goldschmidt, minus 330 Arenado. That's minus 172. You're not even close to being, I mean, I don't think people are going to do hitter prop parlays there. All of a sudden, you need to add another guy in. You throw Soto in, go plus 137 all of a sudden, and say future teammate parlay. Perhaps so. Again, it is kind of fantastic that amidst all of the trade speculation, the two series that lined up for the Nats were the Los Angeles Dodgers and the St. Louis Cardinals. Worked out quite nicely. A lot more baseball for us to break down. You are watching and listening to The Early Line with Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside right here on Sports Grid on a Friday morning. We'll be right back after this quick break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Baseball preview continues with a huge favorite. One of the biggest we've seen Oh, is this the biggest? No, is this the biggest favorite we've seen all year, Donnie? What was that Baltimore
4-1?
Or not Baltimore, Toronto against the, it was against the Royals. Interesting.
Did it close higher
minus
than
4? Minus 405. It did go higher than 4. But, wow. So think about that. That was basically like a taxi squad that showed up in Toronto. And they were like minus 4, between minus 400 and minus like 420. Like it was moving throughout the day, I believe. This is just the normal Yankees. Now, Benintendi's been traded to the Yankees, but Gerrit Cole against Bubich, minus 405 on the New York Yankees tonight against the Kansas City Royals. A monster number. Obviously one of the biggest we've seen all year long. What are we doing here with the Yanks and the Royals?
Yeah, this is one where, you know, not even a parlay piece really makes sense if you're going to include the Yankees. Should they win tonight with Gerrit Cole on the mound? Absolutely. But I got to tell you, like, Bubich is a left-handed pitcher here. He's got a high xFIP over the past 30 days and certainly a higher xFIP there over the last 60 days. But he does have a decent ERA. But here's the argument that you can make. If you look at the Yankees over the past month, they have absolutely destroyed left-handed pitching. When I tell you, like, Josh Donaldson's got a weighted on base average of 213. Higashioka is at a 197. But take a look at the rest of these guys. And I frame this by saying a 325 weighted on base percentage is very good in Major League Baseball. Anything above that, you're getting into elite territory. LeMahieu, 455. Judge, 570. Rizzo, 437. Torres, 498. Benintendi, 354. Hicks, 466. Connor Falefa, 498. Those numbers are astronomically off the charts. But as I say this, Bubich is a lefty. He's actually struggled with left-handed batters over the past 30 days. So if you're lining up an Anthony Rizzo there, maybe a Benintendi, that makes some sense. But primarily, you're going to be facing right-handed batters for Bubich. He hasn't been bad, though, Kevin. Over the past 30 days, 101 batters he's faced from the right side, a 282 weighted on base percentage, and an ISO power number of 136. So you're looking at what was a strength here from Bubich going up, which what's a strength for the New York Yankees. But you sort of lean towards the Yanks. But I told you yesterday, I thought they would struggle a little bit against Singer on the mound, and they didn't get any runs off him yesterday. So maybe the Yankees a little bit down in the dumps, but how many runs do you actually need with Gerrit Cole on the mound versus the Kansas City Royals anyway? Yesterday, you only needed one. Maybe you only need a few. But if I had my druthers, I'm more likely betting on the Yanks to hit with those astronomical weighted on base percentages than another 1-0 performance.
Is the weather inspiring maybe some confidence? Because again, it's a 5.5. Could you look home run props here? It's, again, like you said, it doesn't even make sense from a parlay piece. I cannot possibly tell people to lay 2.5 runs here. Like, how can you try and attack this?
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up, too, because let's just say the game does get played, because there's precipitation about 50-50 tonight, which, again, sometimes comes in with Gerrit Cole. Let's just say this game starts, Kevin, at 7:05 tonight up in the Bronx, and by 7:25, there's a rainstorm that brings out the tarp. A lot of teams, particularly the Yankees, say, do we want to bring Gerrit Cole after a 45-minute rain delay or just sit him out because we can beat the Royals anyway? So there's one of those added advantages where if you're saying, I want to take the dog, Bubich probably pitches where, you know, Gerrit Cole won't. But at the same time, you do have 82 degrees, muggy conditions, and 10-mile-an-hour winds blowing out the center field. So if this game does get played and maybe that 50-50, it doesn't rain, that's a really good hitting night there in the Bronx for Yankees batters and also, quite frankly, Kansas City Royals bats as well.
Right now, Judge is plus 220 to hit a home run. The second guy is Josh Donaldson at plus 340. Does Donaldson have some, like, bizarre, like, great numbers against Bubich?
No.
Yeah, he does. You knew that. Two career home runs against Bubich. Yeah. No, that's what it was, one of those things, because your breakdown was like, yeah, he's not great. He had to have historical context there to provide those numbers all of a sudden. Brewers, Red Sox. Sadly, this is not as a fatal series as I wanted it to be. As Boston has expressed to Bogarts, they won't trade him. I just thought it would be a better deadline if Xander Bogarts was legitimately on the market. It's Woodruff versus Bello in Fenway, and it's a minus 168 number on the Milwaukee Brewers. Total here is a 9. Clearly, the expectation is Milwaukee's going to be able to get theirs.
Yeah, Bella's going to get smoked tonight. Let's take a look at the FanDuel Sportsbook right now. Another one of those prices that you see where you're intending somebody to get smoked. It's at a 5 at a minus 118. Not a 5 at like plus 104 where they just don't want to give you the 4.5. This is a legitimate 5 here, and rightfully so. If we take a look at Bella last 30 days, Kevin, an XFIP over 5. How about the strikeout rate here for him? 14%. How about his walk rate? 13%. That's never a good thing. But also you say, well, maybe he's getting a little bit lucky here. Not necessarily. Left-handed batters, which again, Bella's a right-handed pitcher, Kevin. 425 weighted on base percentage of lefties. How about the righties? Got to be a little bit better, right? No, it's actually worse. A 479. So let's flip it over to the anticipated lineup tonight for those Milwaukee Brewers. Yeah, and just take a look at just ISO power numbers of the first 7 guys. Keep in mind, once again, 175 or higher is a legitimate power number versus a certain pitcher. Yelich, 183. Adames, 192. Telez, 278. McCutchen, 227. Renfro, 441. Wong, 188. And Urias, 323. They should do damage tonight in Boston. Let me just take a quick peek here if we have any weather concerns or conditions. How about this one, Kevin? 85 degrees, no rain at first pitch, 10-mile-an-hour winds blowing out. They're going to score. The Brewers are going to score.
That Brewers team total, as you mentioned there, is a flat 5. So a number that 5.5 would be a lot to shift to, but you'd probably rather get in before the juice starts to flip around. We have seen juice fives plenty of times. Woodruff strikeout prop, 7.5. It's a big number. You know, if you're looking to bet the over on Woodruff, who has K'd 8-plus in 4 of his last 5, I would try and wait and see if you can get that minus 152 number to push it down to a 6.5. I don't think I'll be on Woodruff either direction tonight, but again, if you are looking to go from the trend angle on Woodruff, I would approach with patience right now. Atlanta and Arizona, Kyle Wright's got the ball against Madison Bumgarner, and it's a minus 220 total. Occasionally I see Matt Bum on the mound, and you know, we talk about trade deadlines and things like that, and it just always fascinates me that he's largely irrelevant in the scope of Major League Baseball, right? Like the premier playoff pitcher, and it just doesn't really ever come up. At least it's relevant to me around this time of year. Again, Atlanta obviously a big favorite. So how do you approach this one?
Yeah, maybe sneaky here for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Not talking about winning the baseball game, because that'd be a nice price to take down at a plus 184. But let's also remember, we are playing in Atlanta tonight, so doing a quick review. There is some rain in the forecast, but one of those typical games, 85 degrees, hot and muggy, wind blowing out to left field. We'll see how much this game gets in, or if it has to be delayed at this point. But let's take a look at Kyle Wright, the pitcher. He's a good pitcher. There's no doubt about it. And Atlanta's got a good young staff here. They should win this game. But if you have like one of those sneaky team totals that you might want to look at, and it's why I find Arizona, quite frankly, so fascinating so many times we bring that up, because anytime they face a right-handed pitcher, the unique ability to stack at least 7 left-handed batters in the lineup. Now, why is that important here? XFIP for Kyle Wright over the past 30 days, it's okay, around a 4. Take a look at his splits, though. He's a right-handed pitcher, Kevin, going up against right-handed batters, which is primarily the majority of Major League Baseball. A 182 weighted on base percentage and an ISO of 071. You're talking about lockdown performances over the past 30 days. But the door is cracked open, Kevin, from the left-hand side. Weighted on base percentage of 338 to lefties and a 197 ISO power number. And as I said, Arizona, and it's not just the fact that they can stack lefties. They can stack guys who do damage against right-handed batters. If you look at the lefties anticipated in the lineup tonight, 423 weighted on base percentage, 386, 348, 331, 383. There's some guys that are doing damage, so you don't need a lot either. You're going to get 9 full at-bats in Atlanta. If I take a look at the FanDuel Sportsbook right now, their team total, talking about the Arizona Diamondbacks, a minus 112 for a 3.5 runs. That's not bad at all. And maybe they can get the 4 runs tonight, where most people would just be looking to take Atlanta or maybe an Atlanta team total. I'm looking the opposite way. Sneaky team total on the D-backs at 3.5.
Not bad. Certainly enticing. The Braves have cooled off a little bit. Right now, the Mets number is a 3-game lead, and that's led to a minus 210 favorite number in the NL East divisional odds there. A lot of season left, certainly, but just kind of giving you that updated outlook. Let's go back to Mariners Astros. It's kind of funny because right now, it almost seems like the approach on Houston is, do they have a legitimate team in front of them? Well, then you got to back the Astros. They definitely have a legit one in front of them in the Mariners and last year's AL Cy Young winner in Robbie Ray. Luckily for Houston, they're throwing Justin Verlander at a minus 172 number. I bet you there's some people, I know it's juicy, but Verlander at home under 200, I think there's going to be some people enticed here with the way that they've been beating up on the Mariners. Would that be the right approach, Donnie?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the right approach, but I do know both of these pitchers here are really going to get after it. A 60-day snapshot between both of these guys, and I know you love K-props. How about 29% of the batters coming up against Robbie Ray get struck out? How about Verlander here? 26.6, so 27% here as we take a look. But if we line up the bats and what makes sense, you usually said, you know what, I'm going to give the nod to the lineup here for the Houston Astros, and rightfully so. Look at the first three guys in the lineup against left-handed pitching, which Robbie Ray is. How about his xFIP number at 2.85 over the last 30 days? That is insanity, but you do have guys that are not struggling, to say the least, here against left-handed pitching. Altuve, 468 weighted on base percentage. Gurriel, 399. Alvarez, 427. Off the charts, guys, to face Robbie Ray. But as we said, an elite strikeout pitcher. If we take a look on the opposite side here with Justin Verlander, a 315 xFIP number over the past 30 days, dominant to lefties and righties. And really, quite frankly, the only three guys that make sense in this lineup with ISO power numbers versus right-handed pitching over the past 30 days for the Mariners: Rodriguez, France, and Santana. These two teams, even though, Kevin, we're in a true hitter's ballpark, it screams under. So I look at the 7.5, and you say, well, lineups, could they go yard? Sure they can, but I'm not going to be surprised after 5 or 6 innings. This game's like that 2-1 affair, and both of them have pretty good lockdown bullpens. I'll lean under the 7.5 in this game down in Houston.
I'll tell you what, this would be a nice game to get a boost on. How generous can we be? Each guy to get 5 strikeouts in a parlay right now is minus 192. Can we go for minus 192 to plus 100? Each guy to K5.
Yeah, we can.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, we can.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind that there. I will say the only concern point is Robbie Ray's last outing was against the Astros, and he was absolutely lit up. He only lasted 3 innings, 10 hits, 6 earned, 2 homers. He was only able to record a strikeout because he was out there for just so little. But it doesn't mean it's going to happen every time. Baseball's not Groundhog Day. We know that, but I did think that was noteworthy. Enough time to bring up some Dodger baseball going up against the Colorado Rockies yesterday. Rockies was the appropriate phrase. 13-0. The Dodgers won that baseball game. They were all over it early and often. They had 6 runs within the first 2 innings. They had 11 runs within the first 5. And again, they finished it out 13-0. Tyler Anderson gave them a solid 7 scoreless. What do we do today with Dodgers-Rockies?
We might get a repeat performance. And there's a football spread out here. Next week, we'll start talking about Football Fridays here on the Sports Grid Network. How about this, Kevin? Team total? Yeah, 6.5 at a minus 114 price, which means you need 7 runs from a Major League Baseball team to cash. And quite frankly, the Dodgers will get that tonight. Chad Kuhl, last 30 days. How about a nice tidy xFIP, Kevin, of a 7? How about his weighted on base percentage to lefties? 448. How about the righties? 395. This Dodgers team is hot. And also, talking about hot, 77 degrees at first pitch, wind blowing out, 10 miles an hour in Colorado, guaranteed to get a full 9 at-bats, a touchdown on the board to cover. I think they get it.
How about that? A six and a half at actual juice
impressive.
Is probably, we maybe have seen a 7 once or twice, but it's one of the higher numbers we've definitely seen all year. I thought there was like some weird Blue Jay game or something, I could be wrong, but that's a big number, no doubt about it. Good stuff there. The week closes out. It's Donnie Wrightside, and make sure that you listen up.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, last segment of the week right here for the early line on Sirius XM Channel 159, the Sports Grid Network. Both myself, Donnie Wrightside, and Kevin Walsh, as always, bringing that heat from 7 to 9 a.m. before we hand it over to Ben Stevens and the morning after to continue your Sports Grid day. Now, we've talked about a lot today, some NBA topics coming up, weight clauses for Zion Williamson, trade rumors going around. We also talked Major League Baseball across the board, and also next week, yes, next Friday, a real Football Friday as the official start of football season gets underway next Thursday with the preseason. But I got to tell you here, man, those Angels, the center of attention. Why? Because Shohei Ohtani says, right now I'm an angel. Listen up. All right, now the quote is a little bit skewed here, but if you're looking at any hot topics here, the minute Shohei Ohtani says, all right, I'm an Angel for right now. That means, whoa, maybe he wants to get out of Los Angeles. Maybe he wants to hit a different market with a legitimate chance to win. Because then as it sits right now, the Angels 15 games below 500. Those aspirations in May when the team was playing good baseball, quickly up in flames. We don't even know if Mike Trout is going to come back for the remainder of the 2022 Major League Baseball season. But if you listen to this quote, regardless of where I'm playing, I'm going to give it my all and try to win that ball game in front of me, Ohtani said. I'm with the Angels right now. I'm very thankful for what they've done. I love my team and my teammates. Right now, I'm an Angel, and that's all I can focus on. So, of course, we pull out. Right now, I'm an Angel, which means like, whoa, maybe there's some discourse in the locker room. He wants to change teams, which I don't think is actually the case. But again, we will continue to bring up his MVP status because he is an incredible baseball player. He is making around $5 million a year, which is insanity right now when you think about how many players are getting paid $25 and $30-plus million across the league. He's going to get his. But does he want to get his in the state of California, particularly with the Angels? Or maybe he wants to flip across town and play for the Dodgers? Maybe. The good of baseball needs Shohei Ohtani in the playoffs and playing on the biggest stages here. And quite frankly, maybe he wants that now too. Impressive stuff. Thank you for tuning in all week long here to the Early Line. Make sure you stay tuned.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.